Glad to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to begin our program today by talking with you about climate change here in Wisconsin and trying to understand that climate change a little bit. I don't think there are many people anymore in the scientific community who would disagree with the fact that there is global warming. It's occurring. And Janine Richards certainly is one of those people who thinks that. She's with the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, Wisconsin. She's our guest. She's been personally trained as a presenter on global warming by Al Gore and the Climate Project. And she offers a slideshow on discussing our understanding of what global warming means for us here in Wisconsin and for the rest of the world, and certainly want to talk with her about that. She's trained in conservation biology as well as receiving training as a presenter on global warming, so we're pleased to welcome her to the show. Maybe you've got some ideas or thoughts, or maybe you disagree with it. There are people who disagree with the fact that the Earth is warming up. You might be one of those people. Whether you are or you're not, we'd welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Janine Richards, welcome. Nice to have you with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
What led you to becoming a presenter on global warming?
Well, I've been interested in global warming for quite a while. I actually did a project on it my senior year in high school and became interested at that point. And it was the reason that I decided to pursue my degree in conservation biology. So I haven't really done a lot with global warming since high school, but then I found this opportunity to apply to be trained as a presenter by the Climate Project, and I thought that it was very exciting. And
the reason for the training is to kind of spread the word?
Right, exactly. Al Gore started the Climate Project to get the word out about global warming in a big way. He's been giving these presentations for years, but he felt that training an army of people to go out and give presentations for him had a huge multiplier effect. So he's trained 1,000 people now from across the country and actually several foreign countries as well to give these presentations on global warming.
So that's really the goal then of the Climate Project? To teach people about global warming?
Yes, to get the word out and to start to encourage people to change behaviors in ways that will reduce our carbon dioxide emissions.
Just as an aside, what did you do to qualify for the training? Your application process, I assume? And
there was an online application that I submitted, and they had over 6,000 applicants and chose 1,000 out of that.
What are some of the things that you cover in your presentation?
We talk about, well, start off with kind of an overview of the global climate and how the atmosphere works to trap heat inside and what added carbon means for the atmosphere. And then start to look at some of the changes we're seeing now, glaciers melting, ice caps melting, and specifically, I look at some of the changes that we are seeing and will see in Wisconsin, such as shorter days of ice coverage on the lakes here in Madison, and we'll begin to see changes in our summer temperatures, particularly leading to drier soils, more irrigation needed for agriculture, and many other changes around the state.
And we'll talk about some of those, and we'll certainly give you some idea about when Janine's going to be speaking and how you can get involved in that. But let's go to Tom in Stoddard, who's been waiting. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling. Tom, are you there? Oh, I guess we lost Tom. Well, that's all right. Maybe he's still there. Tom? No, I don't know. Maybe he ran away from the phone. I can hear the phone in the back. I can hear the radio station in the background, so I know the phone is off the hook. Maybe he'll come back. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call And let's go to Kevin in Platteville. Kevin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I had a question for your guest. I was wondering if she's studied like the history of climate changes over the past maybe couple thousand years or so. One thing I'd heard was that the Alps were just covered, you know, totally covered in snow and ice till about 600, sometime in the 600 BC area, and sometime in the maybe Dark Ages or 1500s or something, that Europe or areas of Europe had a period of prosperity due to a big increase in climate warmth, so agriculture increased. And I'm wondering, actually I haven't had the radio on because I've been on the phone. I'm wondering if she has ever tried taking the position of both that the change is due to natural causes we have no control over,
mm-hmm.
Human causes.
Human causes, sure.
I'm thinking one of the best ways to really refute or argue one way or the other is to really fully understand both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Janine, comment?
Well, Kevin, that's absolutely right that there was a warmer period in the Middle Ages that did drive prosperity and agriculture in Europe. But compared to the warming that we've seen already, that warm period was relatively small in the scope of the overall global temperatures. And I think that it is fair to look at natural variation as well, because the climate does change over time naturally. But what's important to understand is that, one, we need to look at what we have control over and where we are changing that climate. So if we're amplifying a natural process that's happening already, that could be very dangerous for us.
Thanks a lot, Kevin, for calling. Appreciate it. Now let's go back to Tom and Stoddard. Todd, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I was wondering if with the Arctic having a lot more melting going on, and probably open water would contribute a lot to this, but there would be a lot more moisture available up there. And instead of years ago when we had more of a high-pressure system with cold air descending and spreading down across the United States, that now with water being more available there, there's perhaps more of a low-pressure system with water evaporating and rising. And we seem to, here in Wisconsin, get an awful lot of wind out of the south, which brings us a lot of warmth out of the south. And that air has to be going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
So you're thinking that, I'm not sure I understand your question, Tom. It's the fact that the glaciers are melting is putting more moisture in the air, so that's changing the amount of moisture that we receive in the form of rain and so forth?
Well, it's providing a lot more moisture in the Arctic, and there would be more air rising to a higher altitude in the Arctic, and that is drawing air out of the south. We get a lot of south winds.
Oh, I see.
Here. It's just crazy. Throughout the most of the, well, all of December, and particularly before this cold snap hit, you could just be amazed at how much air would be blowing out of the south.
Maybe a better question for our weather guys, but Janine, you want to comment?
I don't know a whole lot about to comment on that particular question. I can tell you that we do get a lot of our winter cold air out of the Arctic, and that's due to the frozen ice cap in the Arctic. So as we see that ice cap melting more and more and disappearing, it will result in us getting fewer days of cold temperatures, particularly as it takes longer for it to refreeze back up in the wintertime.
Hmm. Thanks, Tom. Bruce in Hayward, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
I have long thought that the name global warming was kind of a mistake. I've always thought that it should have been called global climate disruption. I realize that warming is the cause of it, But I think calling it global warming has given the critics some ammunition because they point to cold snaps and say, ha, it's not warming, it's getting colder. Mm-hmm. I think that global climate disruption would be a better term.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think?
I agree. I don't particularly like the term global warming either. I prefer the term climate change, although it sounds less threatening, perhaps, than global warming does. It's somewhat more accurate because that is what we'll be seeing is changes in our climate. The climate being the prevailing overall conditions, what you can expect in the future, whereas weather is the unpredictable conditions that we see every day. And I was recently reading an interview with a NASA scientist who said that it should actually be called climate meltdown, which is a properly frightening term. So maybe we can start referring to it in that way.
Thanks, Bruce, for calling. There is a difference between climate and weather. You were pointing that difference out. And, you know, sometimes you do hear people say, well, global warming, it's 10 below zero here.
Right. And that's important to realize. It's hard for us because of the daily weather fluctuations to notice incremental changes in our overall climate and prevailing conditions.
Yeah. Dan in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I'm a builder down here in Lake Geneva, and I specialize in green construction and energy efficient building. And I'm just amazed at the number of people that I come into contact with on a daily basis who, you know, aren't concerned about the environment and really have no desire to learn more about the problems that we're facing and what they can do about it. And I was wondering if your guests had any suggestions on basically just how to motivate people and make them more conscious of what we are dealing with here.
Hmm. What do you think, Janine?
Well, I think you're right. I think people are very unaware of what's happening. And our most important task is to get the word out in a big, big way. So talking to people about this problem, writing to your newspapers, getting articles published in your newspapers, writing to your elected officials, all of these things in speaking out is really, really important and critical at this point. I mean, ignorance is bliss. And when people don't realize that these things are happening, they don't really see any reason why they should be concerned or do anything about it. But once they start to see the whole picture, then people become more concerned. At my training for the Climate Project in Nashville, I met a number of people that were there just because they had seen the movie, and prior to seeing An Inconvenient Truth, they hadn't realized what a large problem this is. So they became so motivated that they wanted to be trained to speak out to other people, which was really inspiring.
And you will be speaking there, as a matter of fact, just to break in here for a second, you're going to be speaking. There are four free sessions coming up at the Aldo Leopold Foundation, a couple at the Nature Center, a couple of them, two or three of them?
They're sponsored through the Leopold Foundation's Woodland School program, which is a program of classes primarily targeted at private landowners. So for these sessions, I'll be speaking a little bit more focused on land use issues and land use changes that we'll see in Wisconsin as a result of climate change.
And March 21st at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve in Lafarge, Sunday, March 25th at Spring Green General Store, April 24th at the Aldo Leopold Nature Center in Monona, and May 23rd at the Aldo Leopold Legacy Center at Baraboo. Those are the four I have. And I assume that online, where does a person go to find out more details on those meetings?
Well, if you go to theclimateproject.org, you can search by state, and all of the presentations that are happening all over Wisconsin will come up.
All right. Thanks again, Dan. It is a tough issue to get people to really concentrate or think about it. Many people don't seem real interested in it. So it's a tough act that you've got to perform here, Janine.
Mm-hmm. And I think that people really need to feel that it's affecting their daily lives for them to start taking action on it. I talk quite a bit in the slideshow about Hurricane Katrina and its relationship to climate change, with the oceans getting warmer, driving more powerful storms and hurricanes. And that's something that really made a huge impact on people in our country, was seeing the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. So that's the kind of thing that hits home. And we need to find more examples that people really key into as, wow, that's important. I don't want that to happen anymore.
And I want you to talk a little more about changes that we might see here in Wisconsin that have a big, that could have a potentially large impact. And we're certainly going to take some more calls. Our guest, Janine Richards of the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo. She's personally trained as a presenter on global warming by Al Gore and the Climate Project. And you'll have a chance to join in with your questions here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer. We're talking climate change here in Wisconsin with our guest, Janine Richard of the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo. Glad to have her along and certainly happy to have you listening in. Feel free to join us with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And Janine, just go back to that. Can you give us an example of something, change here in Wisconsin that could happen that might have a major impact on people?
I think that the biggest change that we'll see in Wisconsin is from increased summer temperatures, because as those summer temperatures increase, we'll start to see the soil drying out more and more. More water will be evaporating from the soils, and we'll lose a lot of our summer soil moisture. With a doubling of CO2 in the atmosphere, we can expect to decrease our summer soil moisture by up to 30%, which has clear impacts for agriculture, and it will require more water resources to be put towards irrigation, having impacts on our lakes, wetlands, and riverways as well.
Brian in Hartford, it's your turn. Thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi. Well, I work for an environmental consulting company here in Wisconsin, and my greatest concern is how this climate shift is going to affect a lot of Wisconsin's natural resources, specifically its wetlands. Currently, Wisconsin's wetlands are about half what they were in the turn of the century back in the 1900s. And I'm curious how this is going to impact not necessarily large cities like Wisconsin, but smaller local communities that rely on the water quality that these wetlands provide. And I'm curious if there's been any studies recently done or if there's going to be any studies done
on that, the impact of global warming on wetlands. Okay. Janine, are you, well, maybe just have you comment. I don't know if you're familiar with any research that's going on right now or not, but.
You know, I'm not really aware of any research that's particularly focused on the impact of global warming on wetlands right now. I mean, there may be some that's in progress that I don't know about. But I think that an important thing to keep in mind is, for our natural resources management as a whole, is that things are going to become an unknown. So right now we have this idea of management for prairie restoration or wetland restoration or forestry that's based on what we know our communities are like, our ecological communities are like, based on historic vegetation maps and the like, and we try to manage to maintain these same conditions. But as the climate changes, what those communities naturally want to be will change as well. We'll start to see the southern forests shifting more to the north, many of the northern forests disappearing. So what is going to increasingly be happening is the things that we think we know about land management are going to go out the window, because we don't know what our landscape will look like or should look like in this warmer climate.
Hmm. Thanks, Brian, for calling. Roger in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I have a couple comments and then a question. For the people who, you know, say 500, 2,000, 10,000, 100,000 years ago, the Earth was different, One of my questions, or one of my responses to that, is always how many people were on the Earth at that time? And now we're at this maximum population, and with many changes, if we have food production change much of things, we're at a critical point where it will create, devastate populations. And then one of my problems with global warming, I agree with you, it's not the best term, is to me global warming gets kind of used like save the rainforest. It's a bumper sticker to put on the back of your SUV, but then there's not much more thought. And one of my thoughts, like, and just an example, when you went to Nashville for the training, did most of the people there fly in? Because one of the things I find is that even the people who are aware aren't doing as much as they really could be. For example, could that training have been net-based and then you drive around locally? And another example of just people who say they're aware, there's a person in this area who's organizing global warming talks, yet in the last year bought a new Buick but wants Washington, D.C. to raise the CAFE standards.
Okay. Comment, Janine?
Yeah, I think that you're right that there is always these inconsistencies that we'll see. And I know that personally I'm not perfect. I don't drive a hybrid, mostly because I can't afford one.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that you can do, and not everybody is going to be able to do everything. Not everybody will be willing to do everything that it will take. But I think thinking about, and another thing I see a lot of is these lists of the top 10 things that you can do, which are useful. And I think that they have their place, but I think that it's also increasingly going to be important to start getting people to think of these things for themselves. And so giving them larger rules, like, for example, temperature change is energy expensive, whether you're talking about heating air, heating water, cooling air. All of these things take a lot of energy, so you think where that temperature change takes place in your life, what you're using, and what you can minimize, what you can cut back on. So I think thinking of it in a broader way rather than just, oh, I changed my light bulbs to compact fluorescence, so I'm okay, I'm good now on global warming. And I do agree, too, that the term global warming is one of those, it's kind of a tree-hugger term. It's like it gets shrugged off easily by the general population. It is like save the rainforest. It's like, all right, I'm sick of hearing about that now. So I think, yeah, we need to start speaking more broadly and more specifically about this issue, giving more specific examples to people of what this means.
You know, one of the issues that comes up, I think, for people is that, all right, you change a light bulb and you buy a hybrid car or you bike to work more often. It seems like such a small thing in relationship to what everything that goes on. And we look at other countries and like China, somebody brought this up on the show the other day, China's building, I don't know how many hundred coal-fired plants right now. India is, undergoing some rapid transformation into an industrial society kind of. So when you think about China compared to, me sitting here, it's sometimes, I think, hard for people to understand why would that make any difference.
Right. And you're right. China is definitely going to be a huge issue going into the future. But it's important to realize that right now, the United States contributes considerably more to global warming than China, even though we have just a fraction of their population. And the other thing to realize about the China situation is that they're looking at the United States saying, okay, you're contributing more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere right now, and you've been doing it for 100 years where we're just getting going. So you in essence created this problem, but you're unwilling to do anything about it. You won't sign the Kyoto Protocol to reduce emissions. Your federal government is doing essentially nothing about this issue. So why should we, China, do anything if you won't?
Oh.
I think that we need to start committing ourselves to things in this country as a way to be a leader to the rest of the world.
Hmm. Thanks, Roger. Willem in Colfax, it's your turn. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I wanted to talk about one of the things that the critics of climate change are always talking about is the past periods of either warmer or colder weather. I think that's true, but I think the difference in this case is the speed of the change, how fast it's occurring, and the sort of multiplier effect of that, you know, you keep changing it. And then I thought it doesn't, what we need really is for our leaders to, kind of like Kennedy did with the moonshot, instill this sort of, instead of trying to deny it and suppress science about it, actually challenge the people, because I think by nature we're sort of like the frogs in the water, that boiling syndrome, that if someone doesn't, like our government, motivate us to take this on, and kind of like, I think Al Gore mentioned that in the film, that it could be, it doesn't have to be gloomy, it could be a new economic renaissance of how do we deal with this, and how do we as people adjust to this, and all the things that will be needed to adjust to it, and it, you know, it could be a positive thing.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Willem. I appreciate it. Comments, Janine?
I think that that is absolutely correct, that the picture is, especially as we talk to people that are maybe a little skeptical of this issue, it's very important to keep hope at the forefront. One, that we don't need to despair. We're not done. We can do things to solve this. But secondly, to paint this picture of a future that will involve these amazing technological innovations and really that will be improving our standard of living in a variety of ways, not only helping us to combat climate change, but also decrease pollution and decrease the amount of money that we're spending on energy, decrease our reliance on foreign oil. There's a lot of reasons to start making the types of changes that we need to address global warming, even if we don't believe in global warming.
Okay. Thanks, Willem. Good comments. Marlene and New Hope, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for the program. I substitute teach some, and even if the message isn't getting through to parents, it seems it really is getting through to kids. And I'm sensing a lot of sadness from kids. You know, they're very sensitive to what's happening in animal environments, I think, more so than adults. And that last call somewhat covered it, but I was wondering if you had some other suggestions of some positive reinforcers. I mean, obviously they're not going to get a hybrid, but I'll tell them things like, you know, all of you fixing a leak at home, this is going to make a difference, and that sort of thing I don't think really gets communicated so much in the size of the situation, that, you know, that a lot of small changes can be very effective. So I was wondering what sort of suggestions you might have.
For youngsters, for,
you know,
school kids.
To guide kids.
Yeah.
I think find ways to get them involved. People respond to kids speaking out more than they respond to adults speaking out. So if you can capture some of that energy and emotion that they have on environmental issues, it can be really powerful. I have a friend of mine has a couple of children that are very, very interested and passionate about global warming, and they've come to one of my talks that was in Baraboo, and the son actually wrote a letter to the mayor telling him that he should come and hear this talk because Baraboo should be at the forefront of the global warming issue and making moves to be greener in our community and everything. And I think that we need to find a way to capitalize on that and really help empower the children, the students, to educate their parents into making changes as well.
So some neat thing, come up with some neat positive things that students can, that youngsters can do. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that for a teacher, one of the things that you could do is pinpoint some people within your community that are really active on environmental issues and connect the kids with them. So get them involved in that way.
It's a good way to do it. Okay, thanks, Marlene, for calling. Appreciate your call. Jenny in Mineral Point, your turn. Hi, Jenny.
Hello there. I've been thinking about one of the biggest contributors that must, of the heat coming off into the world must be the battlefronts that we are trying to survive right now. It seems to me that's one of the biggest contributors of what we're trying to avoid and almost anything else. I'd just like to involve the so-called leaders of the country and the world to come in on thinking about things like that.
So the war's effect on global warming, you're
saying? Well, I would think it would have a tremendous effect on it. That's just my own evaluation, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to kill two birds with one stone, eh?
So to speak. Janine?
I don't know how much war contributes to global warming. I know that jet fuel is a big contributor, so I imagine that it has some impact, certainly. But I think that you're right on in saying that it's time for us to turn our politicians' attentions to another major threat that we're facing in our future.
Yeah. Thanks, Jenny. Richard in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm 66 years old, and I've seen quite a bit of change in the world over my lifespan. And one of the things that I think we're in trouble with is looking at all of these little things that people can do when the biggest problem is being totally ignored and everyone is afraid to even mention it. And that is the population of the world. There's 6 billion people in the world. Scientists have said for years that the population of the world can only support 1 billion people without actually slowly or quickly destroying the ecological reserves of the world. I've seen, look at places like New Orleans, and the next one is Los Angeles. New Orleans is going to be buried in water when the global warming finishes bringing the sea level up. They won't be able to finish building the dikes fast enough. And Los Angeles depends upon the Sierra Mountains snowpack every year for a major portion of its water. And when there is no snowpack in the Sierra Mountains, what is Los Angeles going to do? Where are all those people going to go?
Janine?
Yeah, I think that population is a major issue, and we have to think about that. Predictions are our population is currently at 6.5 billion people, and the predictions are that it's starting to level out, but it will continue. There's enough inertia in the population growth that it will continue to rise until we hit about 9.1 billion sometime in the middle of the century, at which point it will actually level off. But that's half again as many people as we have today. And if we continue our current lifestyles, we are going to see tremendous increases in food and demand for energy and demand for water, all of which will be contributing more to our problems with global warming through increased pressure on the land resources that we have right now and increased dependence on fossil fuels as an energy source.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about your presentations. Are you available to, you know, go around different parts of the state to talk to people? Or
I am, yes. And there are several other presenters for the Climate Project that are in Wisconsin as well. Mm-hmm. So I would be able to connect people to those people if I can't personally travel to a location.
So I'm thinking back to the kids, too. Is this something that is appropriate for school-age children?
I've given presentations to a number of high school classes and a middle school class so far. So I think below middle school it gets a little bit technical, and we'd have to try a little bit of a different approach. But
certainly middle school and up.
It's appropriate, yeah.
It's appropriate. And how do, again, before we go back to the phones, how do people get, find out how to, you know, reach you or the other people?
Well, I think that at theclimateproject.org you can contact people or try to schedule a presentation. You can also contact me directly at the Aldo Leopold Foundation.
And the new Aldo Leopold Legacy Center at Baraboo will be opening up in a couple of months, will it not?
It will. We have our grand opening celebration on April 22nd. And this is a very, very exciting building that we hope will serve as a model for addressing climate change in our region. This building will use about 60% less energy than a comparable conventionally built building of its same size. And it will be, for a short time anyway, the largest solar array in Wisconsin. It'll have enough solar power to provide energy for 5 single-family homes.
So just in that one building.
So through a number of different technologies, we've been able to reduce and make more efficient our energy use, reducing the amount of energy that we need. But then on top of that, we're supplying all of the energy that we do need for our operations.
So that's something. When's that date again?
April 22nd.
So that'll be a fun, an exciting time for you and everybody at the foundation, I'm sure.
It sure will.
Well, again, where do you go online to find out some more information about your presentations and so forth?
Well, for my personal presentations, you can look on thewoodlandschool.org, which lists all of the classes offered by the Woodland School at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And they're also listed on theclimateproject.org.
Climateproject.org as well. Okay. Jeanine, a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us, and good luck with your presentations.
Thank you, Larry.
Jeanine Richards will be speaking at a number of places. Just to give you a quick rundown here, March 21st at 7 p.m. at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve in Lafarge, the 25th of March at Spring Green General Store at 2 p.m., it's Tuesday, April 24th at the Aldo Leopold Nature Center in Monona at 7 p.m., May 23rd at the Aldo Leopold Legacy Center in Baraboo at 7 p.m. And if you want some more information about maybe having her or someone else come and speak to a local group or perhaps middle school and higher, if you're a teacher, you might want to have someone come in and speak. Once again, give me that once more.
You can find my contact information through the Aldo Leopold Foundation, which is aldoleopold.org.
Thanks, Jeanine. Thank you very much. Jeanine Richards of the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, Wisconsin. She's a presenter on global warming. She was trained by Al Gore and the Climate Project scientists. She's trained herself in conservation as well, in conservation biology. That's where her degrees come from. And she has a slideshow and discussion on understanding what global warming means for Wisconsin and the globe. Pleasure to have her with us. We're going to take a look at some neat things that you can do here in Wisconsin coming up. In particular, we're going to focus on farm tours here in Wisconsin with a couple of guests. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.